Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
What's up, Airheads? Welcome back. It's time once again for Putting On Airs. We're here in the virtual Airstream studios. I'm Trey. That's Cho. Cho, listen, I want to share something with you. An Airhead sent me something, sent me an article, funnily enough, in the Washington Post a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Sorry, I can't remember who it is. They're also a patron of mine. It's one of the regulars, but I can't remember which one. I apologize. I'm sure they'll let me know this week, probably. Which is fine, but I appreciate it. An article in the Washington Post, quite obviously an opinion piece, entitled How and Why to Peacefully Coexist with Squirrels.
Get out of here. Why? I like the why part.
Yeah, the subtitle is The Case for Learning to Embrace One of Nature's Best Helpers, right? Because it starts with this. Talking about this guy, Bill Carver, who's a 64-year-old campground host in state parks and stuff. He lives in his RV full-time. He's got the RV out there, you know?
Yeah, hell yeah.
Living the dream. And apparently living in state parks and campgrounds and stuff in an RV, you deal with a lot of squirrel bullshit, right?
Yeah, I would say.
Constantly. And Bill has been putting up with it for too long, and by God, he's fed up. They don't hit for him. He's tired of it. He's sick of them. He says they cause a tremendous amount of damage. You know, so they've chewed through his insulation, fucked his grill up, knock over his propane tanks, leave piles of nutshells on his picnic table. I mean, that one don't seem so bad.
Well, I was about to say they
brush that off.
they cause a lot of damage when you bring your shit into their place. So I don't really feel too bad for these people, but go ahead.
Okay, well, with this guy, sure. But I guess any human, hell, I'm saying squirrels are in every neighborhood in America,
right?
Too.
Our house is
they'll come into your house, your garden, and all that stuff and fuck shit up. And he says it's an ongoing battle, constant vigilance and concern, right? So this led this guy to founding a Facebook group that he runs, which I don't know how I'm just now finding out about. Called Squirrel Haters of America.
Hey.
Yeah, the SHA. And I need to get, I'm going to be a card carrying member soon enough since I just found out about it. But yeah, and he says
that's
that he does.
That's people from California say yes. Shaw.
Shaw. Yeah, right.
Shaw.
That's funny. I have a bit in my act right now where I do a Shaw. Shaw's hit. They do hit. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, this guy, and he's gotten, you know, gotten some traction. People have joined up because anybody with a garden's like these little fuckers, you know, you got a bird feeder. They're always eating all the birds' food and shit. They're just little shits. They're always fucking with shit all the time.
Yeah.
And people understand it. Well, this article quotes all these scientists, like zoologists and stuff. And it's funny to me because like the whole rest of the article is basically these scientists being like, you don't have to hate squirrels, you know, like they go into all this stuff about how it's weirdly they're not very well understood ecologically somehow. Like this one scientist said, quote, I looked at the literature and I couldn't believe there was not one single published ecological study on gray squirrels in New England.
On that like Facebook that. Page?
No, this is dude, this is a guy in like this is a different this is a like a university professor, like, you know, right. Squirrel doctor. You know, like, I'm not a squirrel doctor, this guy's a squirrel doctor, I guess.
Right.
But anyway, and it's going to this whole thing that I don't know. I feel like most people know this, everything they say in here. Like, I definitely felt like I knew it. The basic case they make is like, look, squirrels plant nuts and seeds and stuff. Like, they don't mean to. They make, we've all heard, right. They make their little stashes for the winter, and then they
completely forget
where that's at, which is adorable and R-worded, right? Adorably R-worded. And
it's also funny because, like, squirrels, but like when we talk about ADD people, we always like, yeah, they're doing a thing, and then all of a sudden, squirrel, you know,
yeah, right.
And like squirrels be doing that too.
They do that too. You're right. That is funny because that actually, Eddie, I think the squirrel thing comes from Up, the Pixar movie Up, the dog in Up.
Uh-huh.
That's the origin of squirrel, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
But with squirrels doing it, Eddie Izzard, on one of my all-time favorite comedy specials, Dressed to Kill, on that special, I don't even remember how squirrels come up, because, you know, he's a stream of consciousness ass motherfucker. He's all over the place. Somehow at one point, squirrels get brought up, and all I can remember is him going, he's like, I like squirrels because they'll be out there doing their squirrel business, and every now and then they'll just go, did I leave the gas on?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm a fucking squirrel. And back to the nuts, innit? which, you know, always hit for me. But anyway, these scientists are like, you know, it's not just acorns, you know, seed distribution, they eat plants and berries, they even spread fungi, Cho, because they'll go digging around, they get covered in fungal spores, they go dig somewhere else, disperse those spores, so they like spread a lot of other, you know, plant and fungal species around this earth of ours. Also, they serve, and this part obviously hits harder for me, they're also an very important part of the food chain, because so many bigger things eat they little asses, right? So that's important too. And but, you know, again, like, yeah, I know. I knew all that. First of all, I don't – this is what happens to me with so many things, I feel like. And I've ran with it. I've gone along with it because it's funny to me. But I'm not, like, on a crusade against squirrels.
No, you never have been.
I just don't think they have the capacity to love. That's all I ever said. But the airheads have interpreted that as me being like the fucking punisher for squirrels, right, or something. And I'm not. But yeah, so they sent me this article.
That's how,
like,
people are.
I know they do squirrel stuff that's important or whatever. And then at the end of the article, they go into something, they're like, but we know they can be little shits. So here's some things you can do to keep them from fucking your shit up. And they talk about, there's like mesh you can buy to like put around your garden, or you could put chili powder down to keep them away. Ideally, I heard that about raccoons once, because I did wage war on a family of raccoons when I lived in Oak Ridge. And that chili powder didn't do shit, bro. They was snorting that shit like fucking Cubans in the 80s with cocaine. Yeah, I don't know. But I'm saying it didn't do nothing. Like, they seem to just rile them up. They just fuck my shit up even worse when I put chili powder all around it. So I don't know. It might work on squirrels, though.
Speaking of raccoons, and this is where, you know, we always talk about how, like, the internet is kind of dangerous. And it is, for, like, misinformation, for bullying, for harassment, whatever. But I also think the internet is dangerous for what it's done in the wild animal community, in terms of like normalizing wild animals just being around kids and humans. Because, but maybe I'm wrong, because, you know, we found out later in life, like when you're a kid, all you hear is don't go near a possum because they got rabies, right? Well, it turns out possums like have one of the lowest rates of rabies amongst any fucking animals,
actually,
especially mammals.
I'm talking out of my butt here, but I think they might be one of the only animals that can't get rabies, I think.
Yeah,
maybe.
Actually, no, you might be right. Yeah, they're like, but my point is like, they don't be having it, but we were told that they were. Well, now, but another thing that we were always told when we were kids was, hey, They might look like little cute trash pandas, but a raccoon will fuck your ass up. Like a raccoon will throw down, beat your ass. Bro, I can't tell you. And I mean, I know it's the algorithm now, but how many goddamn, and they hit for me, raccoon videos I've seen on Instagram where dudes will just be like, raccoons just be coming up to their house, like 9 or 10 of them on the porch. They're all out there hanging out, them, their dogs, raccoons, their little kids. And I'm just sitting there waiting for the other shoe to drop, like, bro, you know, one of these, like, it's going to be that monkey that tore that woman's face off story. But, like, have we been wrong about raccoons, too? Because the, all the, now, granted,
I think they just,
there's a, like, it's the kind of the plane generally with the bullet holes in it. We wouldn't see the video of a raccoon tearing somebody's face off.
Yeah, I think they just, like, want to, they learn that they can find old candy bars in our trash and stuff like that, and we're, like, useful to them in that way, I think. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think they're, I think they have an instinct about, like, I probably ought not rip that thing's face off, because
like
sometimes that thing drops popcorn, or, you know, whatever. Anyway, and this thing closes. I thought this was funny too in the article. So it gives these like measures you can take to combat squirrels without hurting them or anything. And then at the end, it's like, and as for bird feeders, the best advice we can offer as to what to do if squirrels are fucking up your bird feeders is just get over it and learn to like squirrels. That's pretty much what they say. They're like, I guess you just can't do nothing about that, because the article is literally like, why do squirrels not here for you? You got a problem with squirrels? Like, if you put if you put a bird feeder in your yard, you want to see wildlife, right? Why is it only just birds? Why don't you give squirrels some love too? It's just, it's a funny way for an article in the Washington Post to end to me, but it's like, they're just kind of acknowledging that, like, It's like, deal with it. What else you want us to say? So anyway, I've had that. I was going to, believe it was like the week before last, somebody sent me that. And then last week we had Clifton on, and I didn't want to dive into all that with him here. So I was waiting to share that with you, but there you go. There you have it. And, I know I've got, depending on where this episode goes, how much time we have at the end, I was going to do a little more spring cleaning, because as people know, if they've been listening for a while, we keep a running dock of like things to talk about, but we very often don't get to any of them. So it just balloons in size, and there's so many things in there right now, which it's good. It's good to have a backlog, but I thought I'd pick a couple of those, time permitting, after you do your pro show this week. So I'm gonna go ahead and turn it over to you for that.
Well, thank you, Trey. This is a subject that I have been wanting to talk about for a long time. It's actually insane to me that we made it 100 episodes and 2 years without Hedy Lamarr being brought up, because personally, I mean, especially when you look at all the facts, like, not many American actresses more so are representative of the glamour of the Hollywood golden era, which I love to talk about so much on this show, than Hedy Lamarr. And I think a lot of people, way more than used to, but still less than should, know that Hedy Lamarr is not just a beautiful actress, but was also, Trey, would you like to do your thing where you tell the thing you know about the thing?
I know that she did some sciencey stuff in World War II and is like a founding mother, I guess, of some sort of like technology, maybe that ended up with Wi-Fi, or I don't know, something like that. She did some important science shit during World War II, in addition to being this beautiful star of stage and screen, right?
Yes, you're definitely on the right path. And like I said, I think anybody that brings up Hedy Lamarr nowadays probably has that little factoid, but I don't know that they know exactly how important the work was, or exactly how it came about, and, you know, how important she was. But yeah, so Hedy Lamarr, born on November 9th, 1914, in Vienna, Austria, Hungary, as Hedwig Eva Marie Keisler. Now, she had a pretty decent life. Her parents weren't, like, loaded, but they were, like, they were the type that they could afford to go to the theater, and they were, quote-unquote, you know, patrons of the arts. Like, they were in all the little groups, and they went to the theater all the time. And so, naturally, Hedy falls in love with acting and just that sort of like performer kind of you know, deal. But you heard me earlier, she was born in 1914 in Vienna, Austria. that was not a great time to be in Austria, around that area, because they were Jewish, right?
I was about to ask that. Yeah, right.
Yeah, they were Jewish. Now, I think, and this is not me saying this, this is just how it is and how they would even refer to her in Hollywood. Like, she could pass as maybe not Jewish. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? And her last name's Keisler, which, I mean, that's very German sounding to me. Right. But anyways, pardon me.
I just said, right. Yeah, no, I agree with you. It does. Hear Keisler. I think, schnitzel, not yarmulke.
Exactly. So while she's over there, like I said, when she's a kid, like they don't really, man, you know, because the thing about Hitler, the thing about that whole thing is, like, it's funny, like, obviously this isn't how it happened, but I guess as like a kid, it was always like in my mind where it's like, man, the Jews were doing fine. And then one day Hitler was like, no more Jews. But like, obviously, right. Hitler was the tipping over point of something that had been building in the area for a long time. Like, he wasn't the first one to come out and say that shit. He,
like, dude, I mean, I feel like, I mean, shit, they got like run out of Egypt, didn't they? I mean, they like, left it. I'm upset. Like, they like, Jews, people have been all Jews' asses since they got started for whatever reason, even way before they killed the fake Lord and all that, which pissed a lot of people off. Even before that, people didn't fuck with Jews. I don't know why. I say I don't know why. I've heard some explanations for it. I'm sure you have too. Like, what the whole like money grubbing stereotype with Jews, apparently that comes historically from the fact that it used to be illegal to loan money. It was illegal to loan money with an interest rate, right? So why would you do it unless it's just like to your family member or something? You know what I mean? It was illegal to own money with an interest rate and for like religious reasons, but Jews were allowed to do it because they were a different religion. So like they became the only people in all these ancient cities who could give out business loans and stuff like that. And that, you know, anytime you do business with people and shit fails and whatever else, like it leads to animosity. You can't pay it back, whatever. I mean, you know, it just led to like tension, I guess. And also the stereotype of them being, you know, like I said, miserly money grubbers and that sort of thing. So, that don't explain all of it. You know, they still just, I don't know. A lot of anti-Semitism from the dawn of time, I reckon.
Yeah, dude, for sure. But like, so I guess my point was like, you know, like I said, it's like Hitler wasn't the first guy to be like, hey guys, I don't know if y'all ever thought this, but Jews, I don't know about that. So he, you know, he comes to power because they were already feeling that shit. So when she's a kid, dude, 17's a kid. I don't give a shit. Now, back then, 17 was definitely not considered a kid, even a little bit. But she marries this dude named Frederick Mandel, who was considerably older than her, and he was a prominent Austrian fascist and an arms dealer. And who did he sell arms to, Trey? Would you like to take a guess?
Hitler.
It was Hitler. Yes, it was Hitler.
You just did Gru, dog. You sounded like Gru. Can you keep doing that? Because you sounded exactly like him.
Was Hitler.
Yeah, that's good.
Wait, who am I doing?
Gru from fucking Despicable Me. Oh, yeah. Steve Carell's Gru. You literally sound just like him.
It was Hitler, and even though he was both anti-Nazi and of Jewish descent on his father's side. Is that still there in my arm?
That's good. Yeah, that's it.
Look at that. I got Gru.
How about that?
So even though, like I said, he this is where I get confused on him a little bit. He was like a prominent Austrian fascist, and like, you know, prominent Austrian fascists, these are the type of people who, like, you know, nowadays, if you want to insult someone of the opposite political fair, you call him a fascist, and then they go, no, I'm not a fascist, but like back then this dude was like, you're goddamn right I'm a fascist. Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like they hit for him. Fascism was like, that was a thing that he was like, no, I'm telling you, fascism works. So he's a known fascist, but anti-Nazi, like super anti-Nazi. And the reason was, is because he was, as I said in Gru's voice, he was of Jewish descent on his father's side, right? But he sells Hitler guns and stuff. And not only does he sell him guns, but like in Hedy Lamarr's diary that was published later that I read a little bit of, like she talked about how like he was super good buddies with Hitler and Mussolini. Like they used to come to their house for parties and shit like that. And for the record, Hedy did not like this guy like at all. It's just that like her parents kind of introduced them, and it was sort of like a, hey, go be married to this guy. And a lot of it was that they kind of thought, okay, yes, he's Jewish and you're Jewish, but if you're selling guns to Hitler, you'll probably be okay, right?
Yeah, you would think so. As long as you keep selling guns to Hitler anyway.
Right. Yeah, well, that was not the case for long. But she wanted to escape. She wanted to escape simply because she didn't like this guy, didn't agree with his ideology. Like, she obviously was anti-fascist and anti-Nazi and anti this dude. It's just that, again, he had money, took care of her, and she thought that maybe it would help her not get murdered by Hitler or sent to a camp or whatever. She wanted to escape from him, but like he had people watching out for her all the time. She was not really allowed to be alone. One of the people that was like always supposed to be on watch from her was her maid, right? So Hedy devised this plan. This is when her genius really starts to bloom, because one thing I failed to mention earlier, when she was a little kid, her parents would buy her toys, but they noticed very early on that like her only interest in the toys was taking them apart and putting them back together. She had like the mind of an engineer. She wasn't, even though blessed to be a beautiful woman who definitely played the part of a well-to-do, glamorous lady, you know, and I don't want to say had the mind of a boy, but back then that's definitely what they would have called it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
So she needs to escape from this dude, but she's got to have a plan because everyone's always watching her. So they're having a party. I don't know if it was a Hitler Mussolini party or whatever, but like, so she drugged her maid. Like, she slipped her maid a Mickey, right? So she slipped her maid a Mickey. And then when her maid fucking, you know, falls out on the floor, she drags her into the room, takes off her maid clothes, puts on the maid clothes herself, does her hair like different, and then just slips out through the servant's door, right? Just like fucking, all right, I'm out of here. So that was how she escaped the house. It's a pretty, you know, like I said, pretty sweet plan. And what she did was she goes straight to the train station to go to Paris. And while she's in Paris, she's then like, she had heard somehow, and I'm about to get into one of these like classic fucking Hollywood stories that it just don't happen like this no more. But back then, apparently it did. She had already been in acting like while she was in Austria and stuff, and had longed to go to America because you could only do so much in Austria, and they were sort of exploiting her, which I will get to in a little bit. She had heard that Louis B. Mayer was over in London working on something, right? So that's why she plans her escape around this time, gets in Paris, and goes to London. By the way, she runs into Louis B. Mayer. She finds him. Well, like I said, she didn't exactly run into him. She caught wind that he was there, and she like went to a local talent scout in England and was like, I know Louis B. Mayer's here. I need a meeting with him. And the talent scout was just, I guess, so knocked out by her beauty that they were just like, absolutely, here's a meeting with Louis B. Mayer. You know what I mean? Like, could you imagine?
Well, dude, that's like the classic story you'd hear from Hollywood. I feel like growing up was like,
just meet with them.
I'm pretty sure that, I mean, yeah, she went to him, but it's definitely right. Back then it was like, you know, like some absolute beauty is standing on a street corner and a limousine pulls up, right? And the fucking window goes down and smoke rolls out. And you see the tip of a cigar and a guy just points and goes, you, right? And then they become like a huge star. But that shit did kind of happen. And also, I'm pretty, again, talking out my butt a little bit here, but I think that kind of happened to Jennifer Lawrence
I've heard that. She was like on a corner in New York and someone was like, you got it, sis.
She's, you know, she's Kentucky. I was going to call her Kentucky trash. Kentucky? I was going to call her Kentucky trash, but I don't think her family actually is trash, but I don't think they're super rich. She's like middle class Kentucky, I'm pretty sure. And she took a trip at like 14 years old to New York City just to, you know, be some rubes in the big city. And while in New York, somebody saw a 14 year old girl. Now it could have been a woman, you know, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Could have been a woman who had a campaign with some like fucking Forever 21 or some kind of shit like that. I don't even know enough about it to talk about it, but like somebody just saw her and was like, you. And of course she ended up being incredibly talented, one of the best actresses of her generation, but like, yeah, it just happened, you know? So that shit still does kind of happen. It's always wild. And I, with Hedy Lamarr here, it's a little different. She'd already been in movies. She went to Louis B. Mayer, but yeah, just, you know, just looking how you look is still a huge part of it. Always has been.
And we don't hear of all the times when it happened where like they saw someone and were like, you, we're going to make you a star. And then it just didn't pan out. You know what I mean? Because that's the thing. Like Jennifer Lawrence still had to like back that up. You know what I mean? Like, dude, there was a lot of people, like, I'm not going to name names, but like there was a lot of actors that were in sort of these like huge teen franchises as like secondary characters. And because they got, those movies were so popular, they're like, we're going to put you in the lead of a movie. And they did one. It sucked. You've never heard from them again in your life. And it was because, you know, again, in Hollywood, you can get lucky breaks, but like the competition is so stout that you still got to fucking hit. And the thing about Hedy is that she did hit. And of course, Louis sees her and he's not blind. She's one of the most beautiful women on the planet, right? But the thing is, he'd actually heard of her and he was worried about her reputation because, you see, she started acting, like I said, in the 20s in German and Czechoslovakian films under the name Hedy Kiesler. It's a good change.
It's a good, rest in peace, by the way. Rest in peace, man. Richard Lewis. Yeah. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, that's my personal favorite line from the movie Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Richard Lewis delivers it. He's talking to the witch, whose name is Latrine. He goes, Latrine.
The second best line is the one right before it.
Your name is Latrine? Yeah, I changed it. You changed your name to Latrine? Yeah, used to be Shithouse. It's a good change. It's a good change. So many things come up in life that make me think of that line and say it
all the time.
It's a good change. What's the one you're talking about right before that?
Well, we changed it from Shithouse. That whole segment's definitely the best part of the movie, and I love that movie because I mean,
movie hits, dude. Yeah, movie's great.
That movie fucking rules. It's a great rewatch.
I need to show my sons that movie soon. Actually,
they'll be like, "Oh my god, who's that skinny guy that looks like he'd be Dave Chappelle's little brother?" It's Dave Chappelle.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Yeah.
I ain't say Abe Lincoln. I said Abe Lincoln.
Lincoln. Anyway. just for 2 seconds, because we brought up Richard Lewis, just in tribute of the guy, I would like to say, obviously it sucks when people die, but the one thing that's been cool about this past week is because he died, people have been sharing a lot of Richard Lewis clips, and I'm really glad that a lot of people who maybe only knew him as dude on Curb Your Enthusiasm, or there's some people that only knew him as a comic that was huge in the 70s and 80s, really got to see how just the rabbit hole you can go down of Richard Lewis clips. He was tremendous, and comedy lost a good one. And Curb is not, well, this is their last season, but like, it's almost a good thing because Richard Lewis was one of the best parts of that show.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsor.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Time, y'all. Ain't enough of it, right? That's the one thing we can all agree on when it comes to time. What would you do if you had an extra hour in your day? Get that workout in that you just couldn't fit in otherwise? Maybe take a nap, recharge your batteries, sit down and read a book. Who has time to read a book anymore, you know? But show up for a friend, help somebody move even, spend time helping other people. If you had an extra hour in your day, what would you do with it? We all ask ourselves questions like this all the time. Spend our lives wishing we had more time. I mean, I know I do. I'm in a particularly hectic period right now. My wife and I are trying to buy a house. I've got, and I ain't complaining about this, but I've got some professional things sort of stacking on top of each other. And it's been very, all while touring, and it's been very much I really wish there was more time in the day type of situation for me lately. So I certainly can relate to that. But the question is, time for what? You know, let's say time was unlimited. Time is a construct. What if it was endless, infinite? How would you use it then? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is you have to know what's important to you, and you have to make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Cho, tell them more.
Let me tell you something. You might not be able to tell via podcast or whatever, but I guarantee you, if you ask any of my friends and family, hey, how does current Corey stack up against 2 years ago Corey, they would say, he's in a lot better place. Wouldn't you agree, Trey?
Absolutely.
Well, and that's because I finally started going to therapy. Look, I'd done the whole thing where, like, yeah, people told me I need it. And I knew that my brain wasn't completely right, but I was like, no, it's fine. Suck it up. Push it all down, whatever. And eventually it got to be too much. And immediately I was like, wow, why didn't I do this before? Because, you know, it's a cliche, but I still think it's worth saying. If you broke your arm, you wouldn't just stare at it. You know, you wouldn't just expect yourself to suck that up. Well, your brain is actually more complicated than your arm, regardless of what some, you know, former Southern rap musicians tend to say in their medical advice. Go to therapy, y'all. It helps you so much. It has helped me. The coping skills have been great. The medication has been great, too. But I think the therapy really drove that home. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. That's my favorite part because I don't really like to go to appointments. I like to be able to be in my pajamas whenever I want. I'm not wearing underwear right now, and I don't have to do it in therapy. Just fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist. And by the way, you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Sometimes it just don't work out. You know, it's nothing personal. It's just like maybe you need someone who sounds more like you or has a similar life experience to you. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/POA today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/POA. Get your brain fixed. Excuse me.
Well, top of the morning to you. This episode is brought to you by the St. Patrick's Day Shamrock Shavers, Manscaped. This year, don't just chase rainbows. Make your own pot of gold and groom.
You know, I think I'm doing a little bit Scottish, Trey. Yep. Groom your little leprechaun with the leaders in Below the Kilt Care. Hey, so are they. Say goodbye to your clover forest with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and let your confidence shine bright. Embrace the luck of the Irish and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use code POA20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Y'all, I have constantly talked about how not only do I love the beard trimmer because they've got the little dials on them, but I've also talked a lot about the ball deodorant. And in the past couple days, it came in real handy. I had an injury and wasn't able to walk or get in the shower. And I just had my wife bring me my ball deodorant, and it kept me relatively fresh for a couple days. I swear by this stuff. It's absolutely amazing. Everything they do is great. Trey, tell them a little bit more about our friends at Manscaped.
Ever since I've used Manscaped, I can proudly say I found my pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Meet your new lucky charm for St. Patrick's Day, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. So I knew you were going to try to do the thing, and I was going to try to do the thing too, and you're right. It's so hard not to slip into, like, Scottish versus Irish, and I don't really know the difference when I'm in the middle of doing it. Anyway, this trimmer comes with two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads. One for a classic trim and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Equipped with dual LED spotlights, navigate your shamrock patch in peace. Worried you'll make a mess? Fear not. This wonder is waterproof. Shave by the misty moors, under a waterfall, or even during a rain dance. Irish do rain dances? Anyway, its compact case makes it an ideal companion, ready for any adventure or last-minute plans. Trimming the hedges in your Irish garden isn't just for below the belt. Complete your look with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit plus Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Whether you're sculpting your beard or cleaning up your neckline, these are always the right tools for the job. So here's what's up, y'all. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code POA20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code POA20 at manscaped.com. This St. Patrick's Day, make sure your little hairy leprechaun is luckier than ever with Manscaped.
And now back to the fancy talk. Anyways, Louis B. Mayer was worried about just giving Hedy a contract because she'd started out her film career in Germany and Czechoslovakia under the name Hedy Kiesler, and she gained a lot of attention for her role in this movie called Ecstasy, in which she appeared nude. Now, a lot of people say that it was the first movie. A lot of people say that it was the first non-pornographic movie to ever feature nudity in a sex scene. This has been debunked. There were actually a couple other ones. They just weren't as prominent as this one. However, what is true is that this is the first time a movie has shown an on-screen, and get this, dude, this is 1933, an on-screen female orgasm. How about that, buddy?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty wild. Although, it being Europe,
it's different.
Right, yeah, for sure. I'm sure in Europe that probably hit for, you know, pretty much everybody, but, you know, then it's scandalous in America. It's funny because that's like almost 100 years ago and it would still be pretty much the same dynamic, generally speaking. Yeah. Goddamn pilgrims,
sure.
Dude.
And
they
also
fucked
a lot
us
of
up.
People need... Shit.
I don't know about so you, but bad. I blame the
but
pilgrims.
Dude, you know, I do too. I blame the pilgrims a lot. You know what, man? You know what we should do is like with you were mentioning anti-Semitism earlier, and there's also obviously racism towards black people and Asian people and all this stuff. We should just band together and start blaming everything on the pilgrims. You know?
It's funny. I didn't even plan to bring this up in this episode, but yeah, I keep a running list of topics to bring up on the Well Read podcast too. And one of them I have on there that we didn't get to this week, and who knows if we ever would have, was I was like kind of high the other night. Something got me thinking about pilgrims, and I was like, I know this isn't like the hottest take, but dude, fuck the pilgrims, like dude. You know, like you think back on the pilgrims and what their whole thing was, it's like they didn't fucking hit like that. You're like taught as a kid like they came over here for religious freedom, but it's really would be more accurate to say they came over here to be as brutally repressive as they wanted to be, like, which was considered extreme by the standards of 17th century fucking England.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so like,
right.
Them motherfuckers didn't hit, dog. They the ones that started burning women for liking math and shit, you know, like, fuck the pilgrims. I feel like you ain't
dude.
Little kids. It's like first thing you learn about the pilgrims and the Mayflower. And they don't
hit.
Emphasize how much they don't hit, dude. Fuck the pilgrims.
Right. a lot of people would probably, if you just said blanketly, fuck the pilgrims, they'd be like, oh, because of Thanksgiving. And it's like, dude, we don't even have to talk about that. Like, yes,
right.
Of course that. That's obviously the Mount Rushmore of shitty things that they fucking did. But like, dude, they were pieces of shit to their own people. Like, it wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't just, oh, yeah, the pilgrims, they hated Indians, but other than that, like, no, dude, like you said, like, they leave England to get away and have religious freedom and then come over here and just chunk bitches off a cliff left and right.
Yep.
They
yep.
fucking suck. Also, their fucking hats are stupid. Their pants
so
are
stupid.
Dumb as fuck. Everything has a buckle. Imagine being a pilgrim
Why
and going through
buckle
fucking
on your
PSA.
Hat?
What the fuck?
Makes no goddamn sense. Just no fucking sense. They got their wives had to wear like 6 different petticoats and shit. And if she showed her ankle, you get to throw her off a cliff as well. Like the pilgrims fucking suck. And I do think everything that's bad has happened is because of them.
Because of the pilgrims. I agree. The last thing I'll say about it, you know, we try to avoid politics on this show, so I'm not going to elaborate on them any further. But I've said plenty of times publicly in many different domains that I think the most pilgrimy motherfucker out there, like the spiritual successor to what the pilgrims were that we currently have in America, is Mike Pence, in my opinion. Ain't he like pilgrimy as fuck? Don't you think, Mike Pence? If you put one of them put one of them buckle hats on his head, put him in a cornfield.
Yeah. And pilgrims were always covered with flies. They couldn't talk to another lady. Like, it's a whole fucking thing. Yeah, I hate that mother. Him and I feel like. Yeah, again, not getting political. Let's just pretend I don't know what party they belong to. I think Huckabee would have been a good pilgrim.
Yeah, I can say that. Yeah.
Dude, you got that mouthy anyways.
Part, though. They'd have to do something about that.
Sure does. Wall-eyed, as they say.
Anyway.
Jesus Christ. Anyways, dude, I'm with you, and you heard it here first, folks. Let's add them to the list. Genocide don't hit, Hitler don't hit, 9/11 don't hit, and now. Pilgrims
don't hit.
Don't hit. No, they don't hit. So anyways, fucking Louis B. Mayer is like, you know, you were on screen doing this fucking orgasm shit. And like, and what I was going to point out was like, you mentioned that it was like, well, it was Europe, so it was different, which is true. But like, even in America at the time, like before the Hays Code, there was a lot of shit that flew because there were actually a lot of naked sex scenes in American film when American film first started. It was kind of the Wild West. And then the Hays Code comes around. And then, again, not to get political, but you got people like Ronald Reagan and the HUAC shit who were like really going, no, every single thing has to be completely moral. And Hollywood needs to represent our white Christian nation, which, by the way, is trickled down from the goddamn pilgrims. So. Anyways, she explains to him, she's like, listen, it is true that I was naked, and it is true that I cummed on screen. All of those things are true. She's like, but you got to understand, she's like, I was super young, and I tend to believe her on this. She's like, I was very much coerced into a lot of that stuff. She explained that, like, she goes, look, they basically told me, like, hey, you have to be nude for the shot, but we're not actually going to be able to see anything. It's just that we need to be able to suggest that you're nude. So we need you to take all your clothes off. She's like, okay, fine, whatever. She's a young actress. And the orgasm scene, apparently, this is per her. Now, you know, she could have just been saying this to hopefully get Louis B. Mayer to give her a contract. But she says that, like, she was naked. And they had the films rolling and they started like prodding her and like tickling her and stuff to like get that reaction out of her and then left it in the film. Right.
Uh-huh.
Regardless of whether
movie
or not.
Magic, baby.
Regardless of whether or not that was true. Mayer bought it. Mayer bought it and was like, okay, well, you know what? If you can get to America, I'll give you a $125 a week contract, which, you know, at the time, that's a good fucking bit of money, especially for someone who's like, hey, I want to come to America and do some shit. And it's just a verbal fucking, like, she didn't do a test screen. She didn't do none of that shit. Well, the thing about Hetty, though, is that Hetty, a pioneer in so many things, one of them is knowing your worth. And believing in yourself, because she was just like, $125, go fuck yourself. No, absolutely not, right? And he's just like, all right, well, whatever. So he leaves, right? And he's getting on a boat to go back to America. And she's like, God damn it, if I could just have one more meeting with him, I could make him see the error of his ways. I know it. But so she tries to get a ticket on that boat that Louis B. Mayer is on. And they're like, yeah, it's sold out. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And so she's like, God damn it, I got to get a ticket. So she goes back to that talent scout and is like, you got to pull some strings and get me on this boat. She's like, it's sold out and I'm a talent scout. I don't have boat hookups.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't do that. So anyways, she goes, but I'll tell you this. And they come up with this plan. There was a 14-year-old girl violinist who was getting on the on that ship to go perform in America, who was in need of a governess, right? And apparently they had like another governess on the way to come get on the boat with her. But yeah. Eddie just went there, found her, pretended to be her governess, and got on the boat with her.
That's like something out of a 1940s Hollywood movie, I feel like.
I know, dude. That is unrealistic. It's the Tiffany rule.
I know you put it in the doc, but I was going to talk about the Tiffany rule at the end of this if we had, or I wanted to bring that up. I mean, we can go ahead and talk about it now if you want to.
We can do it now, because I don't mind how long we... Yeah, go ahead.
The Tiffany problem, because I've always been fascinated with the Tiffany problem. That's another thing that I've had on my list of possible podcast subjects that I keep in my phone for like a long time and just never got around to or whatever. It never came up. But for people that don't know, the Tiffany problem is when like actual history is considered unbelievable to a modern audience. It's called the Tiffany problem because people may not really, you think of the name Tiffany and you think of the 1980s, mm-hmm. the pop star Tiffany, or like I went to school with like three Tiffany's because we were born
Tiffany
in the 80s.
Tiffany Amber Thiessen,
right? Like it seems like a very modern, I mean, maybe not modern in 2024, but and the diamonds and all that. But Tiffany is actually a medieval name from the 12th century. That's how long it's been around. And if you have like a historical fiction novel or something with some fucking countess or whatever named Tiffany, people are like, fucking what? Viscountess Tiffany? That don't make no goddamn sense. And, you know, but it does, though, because people just be dumb. They don't know.
It's historically accurate.
Chad, I was actually just kind of thinking about this the other night because, I mean, Mark Antony is hugely famous ancient Roman, right? But like, I was thinking the other night, because I've been watching Rome on HBO for the first time, and I was like,
What episode are you on?
Episode 5 of season 2, and there's only 2 seasons.
Fuck. Okay, you're ahead of me.
So, but I was just thinking that, and I was like, his name is Mark. Like, I got a buddy named Mark. You know, we got a buddy named Mark. Probably got multiple dudes named Mark. There's a lot of white guys out there named Mark. And it's just kind of, it's like Julius, Lucius, you know, Varinus, Bacchus, Cicero, all the, and Mark, Commodus. Right? Like, it's just, but he's so famous, you know, that like people just accept. Yeah, there was a dude back then named Mark Antony, but I just think that's kind of wild. Anyway, like the name Chad is an ancient name too.
Yeah.
People don't realize that.
I'm glad that you brought up Mark Antony because to further illustrate the Tiffany problem, my favorite example of the Tiffany problem, and you definitely know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I was going to bring it up too. Go ahead.
In the movie The Gladiator, there was a scrapped, there was a scrapped, not just scene, but like storyline. And I don't think they filmed it. I think it got scrapped in the like writing process or whatever. Maximus. Maximus Decimus Meridius. Yeah. That Maximus's character, Russell Crowe's character Maximus, was going to be sponsored by an olive oil company to the point that like on his gear, they were going to like sketch their logo. There was going to be billboards of drawings of him with their olive oils, very similar to what you see today in like NASCAR and stuff. And they scrapped it because they were like, dude, no one's going to buy this shit, even though that absolutely is historically accurate and happened.
Well,
but I think they made the right call.
Sure. In HBO's Rome, they sort of kind of touch on that a little bit because they got this big old fat boy town crier. You seen that guy yet?
Yeah.
He's like my favorite recurring character because he's in like every single episode. He's basically an exposition machine is what he is. But it works because he fits in and you understand what he's doing there.
Exposition machines.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it helps you know what the fuck's going on. But anyway, he goes out in the town square and delivers the news every day, very theatrically, right? While wearing his toga and his little laurel wreath and all this shit and just being big as hell. And anyway, he ends it. He don't end every one of them, but there's multiple scenes where he gives the news and he ends it. But he's like, this week's news is brought to you by the Millers of Smith Lane, delivering only the finest flour across all of across all of the Roman Empire. If you value your flour, get it from the Millers of Smith Lane. And then he like closes with that. It's like fucking us doing an ad read on a podcast, right? But like, you know, they were really doing that shit back then.
Of course.
Were, yeah, right. Yeah, and it's it's marketing. There was
Go ahead. Marketing has been around as long as goods have been sold in some form. Like, that, if you sold goods, you had to have a way to let people know that you sold fucking goods and that yours hit harder than the other motherfucker right down the street.
Right. Yeah, another one is like, because of the way Hollywood used to be, people have gotten the impression that like olden times were like, it was just white people. I mean, unless you're talking about like olden times in Africa or something. So
were the South.
Well, people start bitching about, you know, when I say olden times, I mean pre-America. But like, you know, if there's like black and Asian people and stuff in like historical shows and shit, if you get on Twitter, there'll be dudes being like, what the fuck is this woke bullshit or whatever? And it's like, bro, they
existed,
went around the world capturing people, enslaving people, trading with people. Like that shit fucking happened all the way back then. And also like the funniest one that I saw, I know you saw it too, cause Mark showed it to us, was this guy on Twitter who goes by End Wokeness.
Yeah.
Watched the new Netflix Alexander the Great docuseries.
Yeah.
And he tweeted, he was like, I was so excited for the Alexander the Great series. Not even 10 minutes in, and they've made him gay.
Yeah.
When will the woke mind virus be contained? And it's like, you don't know that the ancient Greeks was fucking butts. Like,
the biggest butt fuckers in all of all history.
In my head, even the dumbest of dumbasses.
Right.
If they knew anything about ancient Greece, one of the three things most people knows about ancient Greece is that they was the butt fuckingest some bitches that ever was.
So absolute like just, Hall of Fame butt fuckers, dude.
It just blows my mind. The Castro district
has nothing on ancient Greece when it comes to pork and butts.
And listen, I know that some people nowadays, you know, will point out when this gets brought. Notice you and I right now are not talking about ancient Greece as though they were ahead of the times or progressive on LGBT issues or nothing like that, because
it was wrong general
fucking boys' butts. Like, I'm saying that hits. I'm just saying, if you're talking about Alexander the Great being depicted as a butt fucker, you can't get mad at wokeness for that, man. Like, fucking, they fuck butts all the time. Dude. So, like,
and
you know,
like when you, and that's the thing is like, a lot of people were pointing out, they're like, there's no evidence to suggest that Alexander himself was gay. And I was like, okay, but there's a ton of evidence to suggest that he didn't mind. A hole was a hole. You know what I mean?
That's how most of them were. But they didn't. Most of them didn't think of themselves as gay. Wasn't being gay. It was like, you just like, that's just a thing they did. You know, like, I don't know. It was wild. But anyway.
We've covered Alexander on here, and like it was a known thing. One of the things that Alexander was like famous for was like he liked having younger boys in his stead, and his thing was how fucking narcissistic he was. He had them scoop them out, kind of like how like, you know, rappers have their boy like, go give me some bitches from the crowd. He did that with his circle of people, but he wanted boys that looked like him, right? He wanted boys that looked like him. So that he could, you know, have his dalliances with. And that's the thing is like, you're looking at this totally wrong. It's like, I can't believe they made Alexander gay. It's like, dog, you're acting like otherwise Alexander was a fine and upstanding person that you should, you know what I mean? Like, what are you talking about?
Well, you know, I mean, they know that he like conquered much of the known world at that time. And that's like, that's always going to hit for these people. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, and you know, I mean, that is impressive. Undefeated in battle. You know, like one of the greatest military commanders of all time. But you know, he was up to some fuckery, literally. And otherwise,
of course.
This just reminded me of another thing I've had on my list. I'm going through my list right now. I called it fuckery, but like, I realized something recently while watching a British show. Every now and then, it's like a part of British parlance. I feel like every now and then, like if a cheeky little pug walks up or something like that, or whatever, some kind of cute thing or something, they'll be like,
bugger.
Look at the wee booger. Yeah. You know, oh, this wee booger here. They call it little boogers, right? But Bugger means butt fucker, don't it? Buggery is butt fucking.
Because people would get arrested for buggery.
Right. So they're called, like, they're, you know, it's like a thing to just call cute things butt fuckers in England.
It's really wild. It's really funny, though, because, like, and listen, I'm not saying this is right. I'm just saying it's true. I used to call my dog homophobic slurs just because I thought it was funny. Yeah, like, you know, like, come here, you little queer, except for the one you're not supposed to say. Like, just because I thought it was funny. And again, it's not, well, okay, it is, but I know it's wrong, right? And so when you said that, I was like, huh, I did that too, but bugger sounds cuter. You know what I mean? But yeah, like, I would definitely be like, come here, you little butt fucker. You want some fucking food? Look at you, you fucking queer. You know.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, the Tiffany problem. People, audiences are, it's why, on the one hand, I get pissed at shows I watch sometimes that clearly assume their art audience is completely R-worded, right? Like, that bothers me. But on the other hand,
stuff
like, why don't
you educate everybody?
Stuff like this, you know, makes me sort of get, they still, some of them go overboard with it. But, like, yeah, basically the Tiffany problem is just stating that, like, the general public is too ignorant of history to understand some forms of genuine historical accuracy. And that's something you have to think about when you're making a, you know, a historical piece or whatever.
I think that now that we live in the day of instant information and being able to look up shit, and also, like, as soon as the show drops, there's going to be online discussions about it, whether it be on Reddit or on Twitter or whatever. I think that now, more than any time in entertainment history, they have a chance to go, fuck it, we're going to just make everything accurate, because people will then be, it'll be explained to them. They can, you know what I'm saying? But, like, in 2000, I understand why Gladiator did that, because they were like, dude, no one is going to believe this. And also, it's not like we have a way to really plaster that information anywhere, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, she gets on the boat, right? She gets on the boat, she meets up with Louis B. Mayer, and she's like, listen, man, I'm worth more, blah, 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 blah. And he ends up going, all right, you are, whatever. So he gives her a $500 a week contract. So she got, like, five times as much as he'd said, just by being, you know, I know that her being gorgeous had a lot to do with it, but also persistent. And as I'm talking about, like, her being ahead of her time, not letting a man define what she was worth, standing up for herself. And dude, Louis B. Mayer had probably never had a woman speak to him the way that she did. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And part of him, that probably really hit for him. So she starts working in Hollywood, and all of the studio heads are like, look, you're going to need to change your name, because Hedy Kaiser, that ain't it. That's not going to go. That's not going to work. And so she goes with Hedy Lamarr, which is based on, she was going by, it was Hedwig Kaiser, and then Hedy, based on her first name, shortening it, and Lamarr, which was based on the surname of silent film star Barbara Lamarr. So a little nod to one of the great silent film stars, which really hits for me. Her first American film was Algiers, which was 1938, and she plays opposite Charles Boyer. And that, like, this is her first one. It becomes a major success and immediately establishes her as, you know, Hollywood star, it girl. She immediately becomes the symbol of glamour and beauty. She was actually billed as, like, the most beautiful woman in the world. Like, Louis B. Mayer was like, I get to decide who that is, so it's her. That's how she was billed. So naturally, when you're billed like that, like, you know, people are going to assume it. But also, like, dude, I mean, if you, like, there was plenty of hot female actresses back then, obviously, but, like, dude, she is, I don't know if you've seen a picture of her, but she's hot as shit.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Yeah. Well, because she's a smart, badass woman, she's like, every time one of her movies hits or something happens, she's constantly renegotiating her contract, because she's like, look, I'll just stop. You know what I mean? I hit way harder. Y'all got to get me more money. She's in a ton of great movies. And here's some fun facts that I never knew, Trey. I knew about the, you know, the technology thing, but I didn't know. They modeled. Can you guess two prominent characters from that area? One, a cartoon, and one a supervillain that they modeled Well, one a comic book character that they modeled after Hedy Lamarr. Any guesses?
Betty Boop?
No.
Natasha?
No. Snow White and Catwoman.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right, yeah, that checks out.
You can definitely see Snow White, Catwoman.
Snow White's like an ancient character, ain't she?
When I think of Catwoman, my brain goes immediately to Eartha Kitt.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Michelle Pfeiffer. But either way, like, she was so hot and was such hot shit that, like, these other properties were like, hey, we're making someone who's supposed to be the height of beauty. Let's just draw her like Hedy Lamarr.
Gotcha.
She remarried several times after leaving the fucking, you know, Hitler arms dealer guy. But there's only, this show isn't an infinite amount of time. So I only really want to focus on one. She didn't marry this guy, but they had a huge romance that would end up being very important, not just to her life, to the Hollywood story, but I mean, literally to life as we know it. Me and you talking today. As we're talking is a direct result of this relationship. Basically, she gets with Howard Hughes. And now I'm not saying like she needed Howard Hughes in order to be the great person she is, but she definitely could use his resources, if you know what I mean. And Howard, you know, I think I've done an episode on him. I don't remember. He's definitely come up a lot. But there was a lot of evidence that sort of suggested that Howard Hughes might have been kind of asexual. You know, did you know that?
No. I mean, I knew he had a lot of stuff going on. I didn't know that particular one, I don't think.
Yeah, he loved women and would be with women, but he wasn't one to like hop like. Maybe they'd have sex a couple times or whatever, but like that wasn't really what he was into it for. Now, a lot of it is like he had severe OCDs. He had all this sort of stuff that maybe physical touch was just not something that he could do, or he couldn't be there emotionally for them or whatever. And she actually went on record as saying that he was the worst lay she had ever had, which I feel like is unnecessary shade because otherwise she doesn't talk that bad about him. Like, I don't think he, unless I'm wrong or I misread something, I don't think he ever like hit her or was an asshole to her. She just kind of was like, hey, terrible lay. But Howard was not just attracted to her physically, as literally everyone in America was, but because he had conversations with her, because he wasn't a studio head or whatever, and he got to know or realize like, oh, dude, this broad is brilliant. You know what I mean? And Howard also, you know, definitely considered himself a bit of a genius, which he certainly was. And he just really, he was attracted to her brain. So, hell, it's possible that Howard Hughes was like an OG pansexual or some shit like that. So he recognizes her genius, and she'd always had a knack for science and technology. And like I said, when she was a kid, she's always picking stuff apart and putting them together. And she starts running all these ideas by him. And he's like, okay, I've got to nurture this. So anything that you ever need, I'm a blank check. You just tell my people you need this for your experiments or whatever, and it's done. No questions asked. He builds her a laboratory where she could work on fixing things. Like, she's like one of our papaws who, like, in their spare time was like, I'm going to take that air conditioner apart and then try to put it back together blindfolded. You know how papaws be?
Oh, yeah. Papaws be like that.
So one of the first notable things that she invented she was recognized for her work on an airplane for Howard. So Howard, as we all know, was like, he was a speed freak. He was an aviator. He was all about that life. And he was pissed because this plane he had, he was just like trying to soup it up, like trying to make it a rice burner or whatever the fuck it is you do. And he just couldn't get it to go any faster. And she hears him bitching about it. And she's like, well, you know, fuck bitching. I'm a problem solver. So what she did was this is amazing. She started studying fish and birds. Can you guess why?
Because of like schools of fish and flocks of birds, the way they like stick
aerodynamics.
Together.
Yeah, aerodynamics and stuff like that. So she was like, look, aerodynamics aid them, whether it's in the air or in the ocean. And she redesigned.
Sorry, Joe.
Uh-huh.
Aerodynamics, that's exclusively the air, isn't it? Hydrodynamic?
You know, I've never thought about that, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it's the same concept.
Right.
Like of gliding through the water. But yeah, no, you're right. I never even thought about that. So she redesigned by herself the wings of the plane, and sure as shit, it worked, and she patented her design, right? So she's like, I got to put a patent on this. And, you know, not only is this beneficial to Howard Hughes, but, like, this is in the 40s, Trey, so you know what else is going on right now, correct?
Yeah, Hitler stuff.
Hitler stuff, who she fucking hates. She can't stand Hitler for reasons that everyone don't like Hitler, but also she's a Jew, and even though she fled her country before, had she not done that, she would have absolutely still had to. So, like, Hitler don't hit for her. So she's like, dude, I'm taking this shit to the Air Force, right? She patents these wings. She wants to help the United States military out even more. So during warfare at that time, the Navy, one of the biggest problems that they were having was that when they were like shooting missiles and shit, and they were like talking to other submarines like, hey, y'all finna, you know, shoot that missile or whatever. The Germans could pick up the frequency.
Yeah.
The Germans could pick up the frequency and intercept the transmission. And so Hetty was like, well, you know what? It would really hit if they couldn't do that. You know what I mean? That'd be nice. Right. And so she hires this feller named George Antiel, who you're probably thinking like, oh, he must have been a fellow scientist or whatever. No, he was actually a very well-renowned film composer, right? But the reason that she wanted him to work on it is because the way she's got it set up in her brain is, do you remember, you know those, like, they're called player pianos? Do you know what that is?
I don't think so. What? No.
So a player piano is those that they automatically play. You know what I mean?
I've seen those.
Yeah, now obviously it's all digital, but back in the day, like pre-internet, pre-any of that stuff, they had them, and the way that it worked was that there was like this little motor on them, and you would put in sheet music that was perforated, right? And so it's perforated in such a way that as it slides down, the keys of pianos are picked up through those perforations, pick up the keys of the piano, and they play it. So it's kind of like the little toy ballerina boxes or whatever that's like ding, 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 ding. Same concept, right? Well, he is very educated in how those works, and like he knows how to make them. And she's like, I need this guy because basically the first ever types of computers, that's really kind of how they worked.
Yeah.
Like if go ahead.
No, I mean, I don't understand it. I know that they used like little cards or sheets of paper stuff that had the perforations in them that somehow made the computer do computer stuff. I've seen the cards and shit before, but I don't actually get how it works.
What was that Cumberbatch movie? The what game?
Imitation Game.
The Imitation Game, I mean, that's essentially what he's doing with his machine is you take all these things and it's like one represents a one represents a zero. And if they're all coded in this way and they can hit each other again, that's about all I can say smartly on the subject, which was very dumb. But anyways, she knows she's like that type of shit is exactly how this thing is going to work. That's basically like code. So they use this idea to create a frequency hopping system. Could not be jammed, could not be deciphered. She patented it and took it to the Navy. So what do you think happened next?
They just took it?
No. The Navy didn't. She was pitching it to them, and they just didn't get it. They were basically so you want to put a piano in a missile? What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, okay.
So they just didn't use it. They just didn't use it at all. And by the way, if you're thinking like, well, you know, maybe they had different things they could do, or maybe this technology wasn't really that important. We literally, to now, this invention is what directly led to the invention of Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and fucking GPS. We have none of those things if Hedy Lamarr doesn't invent this shit that the Navy decided we don't understand this. And I am going to read between the lines here and say that it had just as much to do with the fact that the Navy is probably going, well, this is a woman and a piano playing man.
Absolutely.
What the fuck do they know?
For sure. That's totally what was going on there. They were like, won't you keep the smiling at the camera, honey? We'll keep the killing the Nazis. All right, thank you very much. He puts out his 18th cigarette of the meeting.
They literally said almost exactly that to her. They said, I swear to God, they were like, thanks, but no thanks. But we tell you how you could help. Why don't you keep making your saucy little movies and go sell war bonds? Right. Yeah. So she, I mean, did that because, like, even though they pissed her off, like, she did still want to do everything that she could to help. So, like, Hedy Lamarr sold, like, a fucking, I think she was, like, the John Cena of selling war bonds. You know what I mean? Like, when it comes to his Make-A-Wish shit or whatever. Yeah. But anyways, basically a while after that, I think what happened was, like, some scientist in the Navy was talking to one of these people who had been there for the pitch meeting, and they were, like, explaining it to him or whatever. And one of them was like, wait. What? And they were like, yeah. And he's like, no, that would work, right? That would like 100% work. So they decide to use it, right? Without consulting her again, she catches wind of it. But the United States then said that, well, you can't really have a patent and it can't be used because you're not an American citizen, right? So they can't use this thing because Hedy Lamarr is not an American citizen, or at least she doesn't get the patent for it. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, I mean, how sooner we may have won the war.
Right. I mean? Right.
Had instead of her and a piano man gone up to them, it had just been literally anyone else. Which is just, it's fucking, it's brutal and it's crazy. But so aside from doing this, which again, they end up using that because that's how we get Wi-Fi and Bluetooth or whatever. But she wants to be taken seriously as both an inventor and an actor. But like, even after she does this, and like, it was never like made widespread news because God forbid she gets her flowers on Earth or they give credit to a goddamn, you know, woman who had once cummed on movies for doing something like this. They also still wouldn't shoot, like, okay, can I please, though, at least, could you cast me in things that aren't me playing the foreign exotic vixen? Because they would do that to her a lot. Even though she was fucking European, whenever they had a role that was, like, any type of foreign, they would make her do it. Like, they put her in brown face a lot.
Sure.
To play, yeah. like she like, they're like, oh, we have a role for a Vietnamese person. And they're like, ah, she's from Hungary. You know, put her in brown face, and it just wasn't hidden for her because she wanted to play more intelligent roles. She didn't really like, she's like, the fact that I'm considered this Hollywood bombshell is not doing me any favors in terms of me wanting to get recognized for my scientific contributions to the world and helping in the war. So she's like, fuck it. I got a little bit of money. She starts her own production company and just decides to cast herself as whatever the fuck she wants, but nothing really ever hit because, dude, like, we're talking, this is the heyday of the studio system. You know, like, nowadays, it's still hard for an independent producer to get their movie to compete with the likes of, you know, these big names. But, like, it does happen nowadays. And it happens now more than ever, obviously. But, like, in the height of the studio system, like, especially as a woman, it's just not really feasible to go on your own, produce your own movies, and then expect to get the type of fanfare that an MGM has. You know what I mean?
Right, of course, yeah. You couldn't do that.
Yeah, and she didn't. It didn't work. She ended up going back to MGM because she's like, well, fuck, I got to make money. And look, man, the rest of her life was not great, mainly because she was unfulfilled professionally. She was also kind of like a lot, and this is a lot of people were talking about, like, oh, she was kind of hard to deal with. And people were like, yeah, she was kind of, you know, as any woman back then that was quote unquote hard to deal with, she was cold, you know, which probably means she acted like a dude, if I had to guess. And also, you know, it's been pointed out a lot, like, she kind of was just the type of person that didn't suffer fools. And she wasn't going to put up with their bullshit, and she wasn't just going to smile and go, oh, yes, when's my close-up, Mr. DeVille? You know, whatever. But she was, you know, very unfulfilled because she's not getting the credit she deserved. She didn't get the role she deserved. She was also, she had a lunatic son who she ended up being estranged from. She was also one of the OG clients of Dr. Feelgood. Remember that guy?
Uh-huh.
So in her later studio days, she spends a lot of it just methed out of her goddamn mind, because like that's just what the studios did to their starlets. And realistically, she only got the recognition she deserved and desired 3 years before her death, when in 1997, her and Antille, the George Feller, they did receive the Pioneer Award from the Electronic Frontier Foundation for their work during World War II. And then posthumously in 2014, she died in 2000, she was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame. But fuck all that negative shit. By God, because of her, we have Wi-Fi, we have Bluetooth, GPS, and also one of my favorite Blazing Saddles jokes that it took me until I was an adult to understand.
Right.
Yeah. And how'd she feel about that?
You know what? I really wish that I don't think it didn't not hit for her. And I only say that because I watched part of a documentary on her and Mel Brooks was in it. And he was talking about how much he loved Hetty and that and never once talked about any animosity between them. I'd say it probably hit for her because that was at a time when she would have been, Hollywood's words, not mine, old and washed up. And it gave her a little bit, you know, more notoriety. For those of you that don't know the joke, it is, oh, my God, I can't think of his name from the Carol Burnett show. Fuck, not Tim Conway, the other one. Jesus Christ, one of the funniest dudes to ever live. He plays a character named Hedley Lamarr, and Mel Brooks keeps calling him Hedley Lamarr. And the joke is he goes, he keeps calling him Hedley Lamarr. And the joke is he keeps going, it's Hedley. And then the joke, I never understood why that was funny, because I didn't know who she was when I was a kid. And then the joke that comes after it, which is Mel Brooks going, don't worry about it, it's 1860, whatever, you'll be able to sue her. I never got that. And then I got older and I did. And you also brought up earlier that I wanted to mention, because I knew I'd be talking about Blazing Saddles. Another joke from Blazing Saddles, you brought up the word laurel earlier, that it took me till I was an adult to get, when he says, we present you with a laurel and hearty handshake.
Ah, yeah, that's nice.
It's fun when you realize something for the first time, you know.
It's great.
Far into your life, some shit from your childhood that you didn't get, and then later on you do get it. I know that I've had that happen so many times, but I can't come up with any actual examples right now. But it does always hit when that happens.
Is it, what's the word for that? Surely Germany's got a word for that, don't you think?
Probably. You're probably right.
Doofenschleichem.
Yep. There you go. Doofenschleichem. Yep. Let me some Doofenschleichem.
Yeah.
There's Hedy, buddy.
Lamarr. She hit.
She does hit. You want to do some spring cleaning?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the thing I wanted to talk about, we already did. Because we went into it in the middle of the Tiffany problem. I did see one thing in here that you, I believe you put in here. Now this is going to sound like me just like, you know, I don't know, calling you out or talking shit. That's not what's happening. I saw this in the doc and I was like, fucking what? And it made me look it up. You put this thing in there about perpetual one-day blinding stew. You remember that?
Oh, yeah. Perpetual one-day blinding stew. Yeah.
Okay, so it's a screenshot of a Wikipedia article known as Forever Blind for a Day Soup, which, like, that sounds
stupid,
counterintuitive or whatever, you know what I mean, or, like, contradictory, forever blind for a day. But the idea was, or it was also called Hunter's Pot of Blindness, whimsical and fun. It's called Forever or Perpetual because inns and stuff back in the day would keep this stew going perpetually, all day, every day. You come in there, they always got stew going. They just keep adding shit to it, and so it never goes away. That is very much a real thing. Perpetual stew.
Yeah, that's how,
forever,
that's how
stew.
Like sourdough starters also are.
Yeah, they even at like Disneyland, they got some bread they make down there or something, and the mother yeast or whatever fuck you call it, the
it's mother yeast
in there, and you can see it, and it's from like 1944 or some shit like that. And it's
I saw a woman on Instagram recently that she's got one and it's 100 years old and it's so fucking cool. And there's also a lot of ramen restaurants in Japan that they have, like, their pot basically never gets cleaned out because it's constantly cooking ramen, you know?
Right. So anyway,
perpetual stew, very much a real thing. This one is differentiated from a regular perpetual stew by the fact that eating it causes the eater to become blind for a day.
Must hit.
Such foods can continue cooking for decades longer if properly maintained. The idea is that during medieval inns, you get a fucking, you know, you get a knight or a squire in there who's too deep in his cups and he won't stop talking shit about the king and grabbing people's asses and pulling his knife out and shit like that. You know how they do.
Yeah.
You slip him the blinding stew. And it's funny because, like, I don't feel that would necessarily even help. Like, I get that it,
no,
like,
it make it worse.
I get that it would nerf the guy, you know, like, yeah. He can't see, so it makes it harder for him to stab you, but now he's just fucking stabbing randomly. He's just swinging his sword, because that's not going to calm him down.
No.
If he's like hammered drunk and pissed off, and now he goes blind, pretty sure the only thing he's going to be able to see is red, and he's going to fuck all your shit up. So,
you got to get his sword away first. Yeah.
A, that. B, having looked this up, if you go on Snopes.com, this is, I don't know where you had seen this or whatever, but this screenshot we're talking about, this Wikipedia article, is fabricated, and it is not, in fact, a real thing. Again, perpetual stew, because I was reading it, and I was like, I was like, that's like a potion. They had like a blindness potion?
Yeah, right.
In the day, like... Man. That's fucking crazy. I didn't know they had real potions and shit. So I was so fascinated, I looked it up, and it weren't a thing. Again, perpetual stews are a thing, but they couldn't make you blind for a day in the 1500s. I don't think we could make people blind for a day now, you know?
No, I don't think so either. And I mean, dude, now that you're saying that, it's like, duh, of course. But I'm glad that you did your due diligence, which, I mean, granted, once, if I wanted to talk about it, I would have ended up coming to that realization and myself being pissed off. So I'm glad that it happened this way.
Yeah.
I hate that. That's a hidden thing for somebody to make up, though. I'll tell you that. Of all the shit that gets made up on the internet that I may or may not fall for, that's one of my favorite ones. But that's like, surely to God, that was written in some medieval book, like somebody made that up, and then it got, you know what I'm saying? Because, like, that would hit on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, you're right. It is. It's one of those things. It's like, it sounds sort of unbelievable, but also, like, oddly typical of the horrific past or whatever.
There
you have it. Well, I think between that, learning to love squirrels, which I haven't, and fuck pilgrims and the Tiffany problem and buggery butt fucking and all that stuff. Right. I think I'm good.
Let's do some air mail. Subject line, the fantasy kingdom. Hey, fellas, congrats on the 100th episode. Here's to 100 more. So, the fantasy kingdom. I've already suggested her, I think, but I probably just didn't see the email. Natalie Portman as Spymaster. That's a good one. She's got a PhD in psychology, cunning as a fox, and with the acting chops to fool any king, warlord, or emissary. What do you think about that, Trey?
That hits. It's sort of like old, what's her name in Inglourious Bastards.
The actress's
name is Diane Kruger.
So should I.
No, you're thinking, Shoshana is different. Shoshana's the one at the movie theater that escapes. That escapes Hans Landa in the very first scene.
The one in the putsch. Yeah.
The real actress's name is Diane Kruger. I just don't remember the name of the character in the movie, but she's like a German film star who's working against the Nazis. That also was a real thing, I think. Mata Hari, I think, which actually, now I don't remember what Mata Hari did, but Mata Hari was like, damn, I'm pulling all this out of my butt. Mata Hari was like a belly dancer and a hitter back in the silent film era and stuff like that, who was just a white girl who pretended to be, she was a pretendian, but not like Native American Indian, like Red Dot Indian, I think. She belly danced and shit like that, and she got famous for it. And I'm pretty sure in World War II, she did some spy work also, Mata Hari did. And now that I think about it, Quentin Tarantino, wily some bitch that he is, in that basement scene that she is in with Fassbender, and
that's one of my favorite scenes ever of all time.
Me too. Me too. Fucking rules. You know, well, if that's to be it, old chap, I hope you don't mind not go out speaking the kings, right? Fucking God love that shit.
It's so fucking good, man.
She's in that scene, and they play that game with the stickers on your head with the characters, and Mata Hari is the answer that one of them has while playing that game. And man, I'm only just now, this is kind of an example of what we were talking about earlier.
Yep.
It's only just now occurring to me that that was probably a purposeful reference to,
of course it was.
That character. Yeah. Right. So,
man,
anyway,
that's,
how about
that's,
that? That's fun.
I love that, that you were like, I can't think of an example. And then boom, we farted
then
one out.
Then it actually happened. Yeah. It's kind of wild.
That's fucking tremendous. Yeah, dude, that movie is so goddamn good. Not to get completely off subject, but like, how pumped are you about the? I think the casting just came out. Brad Pitt's going to star in the last Tarantino.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super pumped for that movie. I hope he ends up being full of shit and it's not his last one, or at least he goes into like TV or something. Because, you know, I just always want more Tarantino in my life. But that movie's going to hit. I want to say I looked it up just to see if I was way off. I wasn't. Mata Hari was eventually convicted of being a spy for Germany during World War One. So not World War Two. She was earlier than that, but yeah. So that definitely was a reference. But anyway.
Okay. Subject line: sent a box with treats and messages. I'm reading this for selfish purposes, by the way. Hey Cho, hope you're doing awesome. Like a month ago, I sent a box to the Putting on Airs box and just wanted to see if you got the goods. Did not, because I forgot that we had a P.O. box, but we do. For selfish reasons, I'm going to say it. It's P.O. box 240, Chickamauga, Georgia 30707. That is how we got sent our vinegar valentine for the show, so I will go check that more regularly. If you have things you would like to send to the show, you can send them to me, and then whenever me and Trey are together, I will give him his portion of whatever it is, or just something cool that you think we should talk about. Enjoying the top-notch content as always, and hoping to subscribe to your respective sites soon. She's talking about bonuscorey.com and patreon.com/TreyCrowder, by the way. Little plug in there for you. Last but not least, subject line: HO, it's Zach from Substack. Great way to get my attention. Thought y'all would dig this. Hey, y'all, I fell down an internet rabbit hole the other night, as I am wont to do, and was reminded yet again that the past was indeed wild as shit. Have either of y'all ever heard of Vin Mariani? Trey, have you heard of Vin Mariani?
No.
If not, here's the short version. It was an elixir and patent medicine popular in the late 1800s. Among its fans were various captains of industry, assorted robber barons, and at least two popes, one U.S. president, Grant, and Thomas Edison. Here's what Vin Mariani was: wine with cocaine in it. How much cocaine, you ask? 6 milligrams per fluid ounce. At least that was the original formula that was sold in France. When they began to be exported to the USA, they cranked things up a notch to 7.2 milligrams per ounce, presumably because America. Thomas Edison was quoted as being a fan of vino yayo, that's hilarious, because it helps me stay awake. No fucking shit, Tommy. It bears repeating, the past was indeed wild. Thought y'all would get a kick out of that. Love the show and the entire extended Skewniverse. Yes, even Drew's shit. Zach. P.S. Everybody listening, go holler at Cho's Substack, bonuscorey.com, and Trey's Patreon. And if you have a second, give my Substack a peek while you're there. Love y'all like chicken. Thank you, Zach. If you go to my Substack, I actually recommend Zach's on my page, so you can find it right there. But there you go. A couple plugs for our sites organically. I did not make that up. And cocaine and wine. How about that?
Yeah, back before they outlawed the hits, buddy.
Oh, also, there were too many emails that just said, and I mean this in a good way, that just said Clifton Collins Jr. hits and we can't wait for part two. So I did want to throw that out there. He will be back by popular demand. We got just overwhelming positivity about that. And yeah, he's welcome anytime, as he knows.
Absolutely. Hits. All right. Well, listen, y'all, if you're listening to this when it comes out tonight and tomorrow, I'm in Winchester, Virginia, and then Sunday I'm in D.C. Those shows are all either sold out or teetering on the verge of sold out. So hope to see you there, and I appreciate you. And I got plenty more dates coming up in the near future. Go to treycrowder.com, check them out. Come see me.
As I've said, bonuscorey.com, but related to the show, handling a little business, please go, if you're a Reddit person, r putting on airs is a great subreddit. Aunt Tiff and Radical Riley take care of things over there. They're the moderators. It's where we got the idea to do the live stream that was so popular. There's a lot of fun stuff over there. A lot of discussions keep going on, and I check in regularly, so I will converse with you over there. So go join that. And also, if you're listening to this show, we're very happy. But if you could, go to watchpoa.com, which is our YouTube, and just give us a subscribe. Even if you're someone who's like, well, I would prefer to listen to the show, go ahead and subscribe. We're trying to get those YouTube numbers up, which we're kicking ass over there, and even more since the live show. But watchpoa.com is our YouTube. We want to try to hit 10,000 soon, and we're very close. And we thank all of y'all who already have, and stay fancy, motherfuckers.
Thank you.
Here's Lydia Loveless.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cut, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.